Welcome, everybody, to the first Sunday of the month International Secular Speaker Meeting hosted by the International Conference of Secular AA. My name is Joe, and I'm in recovery from alcohol and other addictions. Welcome, everybody. A couple of very brief announcements regarding the international secular AA scene. If you don't already know, the once postponed 2020 face-to-face International Conference of Secular AA in Washington, D.C., scheduled for this month, October 29th to 31st, has been postponed again because of COVID to 2022. It'll be October 28th to 30th. So it's the same last weekend in October. If you're registered, you can get your money back, or you can just hold it in abeyance for next year. It'll all be the same price. If you're if you've booked a hotel, speak with the hotel, and again, you can either bump it up to the following year or just cancel that. And there will be some form of a Zoom virtual International Conference of Secular AA for 2021. We have a committee meeting later this month. I would just, you know, I'm not holding anyone's feet to the fire here, but last year it was, you know, the middle of December. So think it could be, you know, the somewhere around the first or second weekend in December again this year. And we'll be looking for ideas. We'll be starting a WhatsApp group and a Facebook invite page. It's going to be completely free. And we will probably won't say no to anybody. If you've got a panel idea or a speaker you want, just set it up. We'll find room for it. Without any further ado, I'm so glad you're here. And our guests are the Happy Heathens from Glasgow, Scotland. And I'm going to turn it over to David.
Thanks, Joe. And thanks for inviting us to do this. Welcome, everyone. And I'm really just going to be introducing Dante and Karen, who are going to speak. And I think Marion's going to just do the intro parts. And then if you want to speak thereafter, just come in through me, either by raising your hand or the way we do it at our meeting is if nobody's talking, just come in and start talking. And I should say as well, if anyone is interested in coming along to our Tuesday night meeting that we usually have, which is 7:30 p.m. UK time, I'll put in the meeting details for anyone who's not been before. You're welcome to come along. Just tell you briefly about it as well, seeing as we've got a bit of time till 8:30, that we've recently changed our format, and we've hopefully quite a sort of different format from any meeting that you'll maybe normally go to. So we previously were using Joe's fantastic book, which we still use at the two in-person secular meetings in Glasgow. We decided that we would change it up a bit for the Zoom meeting that we have continued with. So what we now do is we have someone come along every week and bring something, anything with them. It can be a video clip, it can be a song, it can be a poem, it can be anything at all, really. We play it or have them read it or whatever it is that they want to do with it. And they then share for about 10 or 15 minutes on what the song, poem, video clip, whatever it is, means to them in terms of their recovery and or addiction. Or what it evokes in them, and then we turn it into a discussion meeting on what the song or poem or whatever, have evoked for the rest of us as well, in terms of our own recovery, or share on whatever we like. So if that sounds like something you might be interested in as something new, as I say, I'll put the meeting details in the chat throughout the course of the meeting. Probably just hand over to Marion, who's going to do our little intros.
Hi everybody, my name's Marion and I'm an alcoholic, and welcome to Happy Heathens. I'm speaking to you from Govan Hill, which is the most diverse part of Scotland. Dante's originally from the Gorbals, which was Ellis Island, of Glasgow. So just a really warm welcome to everybody, because we welcome everybody here. We have a couple of readings that we normally do, so if you just bear with me. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This AA meeting endeavours to maintain a tradition of free expression and conduct a meeting where alcoholics may feel free to express any doubts or disbeliefs that they may have and to share their own personal form of spiritual experience, their search for it or their rejection of it. In keeping with the AA tradition, we do not endorse or oppose any form of religion or atheism. Our only wish is to ensure the suffering alcoholic that they can find sobriety in AA without having to accept anyone else's beliefs or having to deny their own. This is a discussion meeting, but we're doing it a bit different tonight. So all speakers should request to speak through the chair. Be mindful if it's a busy meeting, then you'll be hogging the meeting. Please respect all individuals attending this meeting and any interpretation of the reading. Experiences or opinions are expressed are those of the individuals expressing them. When sharing, please refrain from speaking on behalf of anyone else at this meeting or for AA. No abuse of any nature shall be tolerated. We're all here to help each other. So help yourself to tea and coffee. And the night's chairperson is David. Enjoy the meeting. And yeah, we also have a couple of wee quick readings here. I'm really fond of, so we do these as well, and then I will shut up for the rest of my own tonight. So long as there is the slightest interest in sobriety, the most unmoral, the most antisocial, the most critical alcoholic may gather about him or her a few kindred spirits and announce to us that a new Alcoholics Anonymous group has been formed. Anti-God, anti-medicine, anti our recovery program, even anti each other. These rampant individuals are still an AA group, if they think so. And that was Bill Wilson, Anarchy Melts, 1946. My favourite one, though. It must never be forgotten that the purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous is to sober up alcoholics. There are no religious or spiritual requirements for membership. No demands are made on anyone. Any experience offered, an experience is offered, which members may accept or reject. That is up to them, Bill W. again. So that's me. I'm going to be quiet until I can maybe come in later. So thanks, everybody. Glad to be here, glad.
Thanks, Marion. So now we're just going to move over to our first speaker. It's going to be Dante, who is a stalwart of the groups here and helped set up most of the secular AA groups in Glasgow. So he's going to speak for a little bit, both on that and just a general share. So hope you enjoy it. We normally do. So, Dante.
Thank you kindly. Good evening, or whatever time of the day is, where you are, or night. My name's Dante and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks everybody for coming, and thanks everybody for all our talks and readings, etc., etc. I'm a member of secular AA because I started the first secular group in Scotland. I'm a founding member of all the secular groups. We've got two physical and one Zoom, and I'm a founder member of them all. And that's my cry to fame. And and I didn't do it to be controversial. I can be quite controversial without all that type of stuff, you know. Matter of fact, I'm known as being controversial because I speak my truth. The guy tried to bring me to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1973. I was in Dumfries. I was running a chip shop, which is a fast food shop to you guys. in Dumfries. I was drinking, and a guy said, I could take you to a place that would help you, Dante. I said, help me with what? He said, help me with your drinking. I said, help me with my drinking. It won't be your drinking. If it helps people with drink problems, you go there. He says, well, I went. He said, but it didn't work for me. I went, well, if it didn't work for you, you know, I'm not going either. So that was 1973. Fast forward, 1981, I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And a guy came up to my place of business, and he spent about 4 hours with me, talking to me, and I thought I was never going to get rid of this guy. His name was Butcher Tommy. He's a long time dead now. But I thought I was never going to get rid of this guy. And at the end of his, well, I'm saying his spiel, I know now that he was trying to 12-step me, he said, I could take you to a meeting. There's a meeting just starting nearby. And it was at that point that I realised that I had been a bit hasty in calling Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, look, thanks very much. You know, I identified with the way he drank. I identified with everything about his lifestyle. I said, but thanks very much. But I'm a businessman. I'm not an alcoholic. I've just went off the rails a wee bit, you know, and which was a bit of a lie because I had been drinking alcoholically since I first took drink, and I started very young. I came to the Gorbals, as Marion was telling you there, and I'm a wee bit different from the usual Scottish guys because I'm not Scottish at all, although you wouldn't think that to listen to me speaking. I'm Italian. My father was Italian. My mother was Irish. So growing up in the Gorbals, which was a kind of rough area of Glasgow with a name like Dante, like a boy named Sue, I learned how to look after myself, you know. I learned how to fight. I learned how to drink at an early age. My mother died when I was 7. I was sent away to boarding school. I was taught by Maris Brothers, which is a strict teaching Catholic fraternity. And there was all kinds of abuse there, as we're reading about in the papers now. And I know you've heard it in Canada and Australia and all these places. Well, we didn't miss out on any of that, you know. But nobody spoke about it, and it just went on. And everything that happened to me, I internalized. My brother was worse because I was more vociferous. I had a mouth. My brother was very quiet. I believe he was sexually abused far more than me. He ran away 3 times, he was back 3 times, dragged back 3 times, eventually taken out. He had a nervous breakdown, and my brother spent all of his life in mental institutions, never having had a life. Never drank, but he never had a life. I was taken out of boarding school about 14. I spent 7 years there. I was taken out of there and to help my brother. And it didn't work out. My brother got worse, and I found drink, and I got worse. I was married when I was 18. By the time I was 20, I had been charged with attempted murder. It was dropped to 2 charges of assault. I found myself in Barlinnie Prison in Glasgow. I didn't blame drink. I blamed circumstances, you know, and I came out and I just carried on the same way as I had before, you know, drinking and trying to make a living. I've heard the alcoholics, you know, described as the black sheep of the family. And I was not the black sheep of the family. My father, who was also alcoholic, was the black sheep of the family. I was a disgrace to the family because none of my family, they were hardworking immigrants. They were, you know, my mother was Irish, you know. My father, Italian, hardworking people, honest, you know. Just my father drank, and my mother, because of a bad heart, died young. And various people, friends of the family, would say, you know, if your mother was still alive, it'd be a different story, and you know. But that was the way it was, you know. That was the way it was. I wanted to be part of. I never felt part of anything. With a name like Dante, there was nobody else called Dante. So I never felt part. I felt an outsider, you know. I was Italian, and it wasn't long after the war. Anybody knows of Italy's war record, you know, it wasn't great, you know, and you Italians are all cowards. And so I learned how to fight, you know, and that's never left me. That's never left me. There must be something wrong with my brain. I can go from Mr. Nice Guy to Mr. Nasty in about 1 nanosecond, you know. And it doesn't matter how much I work on that can still happen, you know. I never did anything and drink that I wouldn't do without drink. I've been about here quite some time, and I've come to realise that alcohol isn't my problem. Matter of fact, I say that. I say, my name's Dante, I'm an alcoholic. I wish my problem was alcohol. I really do. I got myself into far more trouble since I stopped drinking than I ever did when I was drinking. Yeah, when I was drinking, I got to jail, and I was police involved, there was violence. But I never hurt people. I hurt people physically. But I had no emotional strength. I had emotions. You know, I believe that when you start drinking, any emotional growth that you maybe have had stops. That's the way it was for me. And that's why, you know, alcoholics, when they fall in love, they fall all over the place. That's why I've been 3 times married, 3 times divorced, always looking for love, always looking for more. Anything I liked, I wanted more. I needed good cars. I needed nice clothes. I needed a pocket full of money because I had to impress you guys. I had to impress because, you know, and I've heard it said, you know, and I put my, yeah, I judged my insides and your outsides, and you all seemed to be normal and happy, and I was inside and always looking for love, or the right kind of love. And then if I got it, I would test it, and I would test it, you know, and then you still love me now, you know. Emotional immaturity, yeah, no doubt about it. But I didn't know that at the time. I thought I was quite some. I thought I was resilient. And everybody would say, oh, Dante, you're so resilient. You've came through so much and blah, 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 losing your mother. So 1981, Butcher Tommy 12 says to me, I get 6 months sober. And then I decided in that 6 months, I became a bore because I stopped people, even people I didn't know. I would stop people in the street practically and tell them, look, I've not had a drink for 6 months, you know. And I had to build up, you know, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 1 week, 6 months. By the time I was 6 months sober, I really impressed myself something tremendously. So I celebrated. And the only way I know how to celebrate is take a drink. And I took a drink, and that was me off and running again. My sobriety date's the 17th of June, 1984. I've never had a drink since then. Battered into humility, gift of desperation, whatever you want to call it, I end up at AA. This time I'm desperate to get sober. See, I believe that there's a time in everybody's life when they can stop drinking of their own volition. But that time had gone for me. I couldn't stop of my own volition. And that's why I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. People stood by me. People gave me strength when I didn't have any. I went from meeting to meeting to meeting. But it didn't stop me from questioning things. I questioned that word when I saw it in the scrolls. God. Glasgow in those days, AA was different. I get sober in a place called Dundas Street, which was the rooms, which was like, it was like Fort Apache, the Bronx. You know, you wiped your feet on the way out. It was absolutely filthy, you know. The people were filthy. The meeting was filthy. But it got me sober, and I'll be forever indebted to it. I don't like MD miscalling Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. But when I saw that word God, it conjured up all sorts of things, all sorts of memories. I said, I'm no interest in God. I didn't come here with a God problem. I came here with a drink problem. And a guy put his arm round my shoulder and said, Dante, when you see the word God, put AA. And that's what I did. That's what I did. And I cherry-picked what was good for me and what wasn't good for me. I think there's nothing wrong with cherry-picking. I don't know how it's like in your neck of the woods, but here it's frowned upon greatly. This is not for cherry-picking. Well, I've cherry-picked my way all through life, all through the program, all through the book. And yet, I was a member of the first big book group. I was a founder member of the first big book group that started in Scotland because I thought there's so much good stuff in that book. There's also a lot of fucking nonsense. This is my experience, strength, and hope you're getting. It's not Bill Wilson's or Dr. Bob's or some wonderful guy in AA. I'm one sick cookie. I put my hand up to that. You know, I'm not a genius. I'm not an intellectual. I'm just a guy that lost his way with drink, came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't like all the bullshit that goes with it. You know, what is bullshit to me? But what's bullshit to me might not be bullshit to other people. Alcoholics Anonymous had it covered. That guy said to me, see what you see, the word God, put AA, and that did me. That did me. I left this stuff to the side, stuff I didn't like. I took what was good for me and I utilised that. I had a good life, apart from being homeless twice, owing to marital disputes and one thing or the other. And I've had money, I've had no money, I've had the cars, I've had the success, I've had the financial gain. When I was 21 years sober, my third marriage collapsed. And I didn't want to drink, but I didn't particularly want to live either, you know, because my whole life crumbled, you know, the whole thing. Not only did the marriage collapse, but because of the type of person I am, emotionally immature, when somebody tells me they don't love me, I've got a very adult way of dealing with that. I just pout my bottom lip and say, well, if you don't love me, I don't love you either. And I can do without you, and I don't need MD, and I can do this, and I can do that. And I thought, I'll go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll find myself another female alcoholic that can massage my ego. And, you know, and that phrase comes to mind all the time. If you're looking for a relationship in AA, the odds are good, but the goods are odd. Alcoholic falls in love, falls all over the place. And that's okay when you're young. And when you're getting old and bald and, you know. But I kept coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I decided that the best thing for me to do was to get into service. And so I got into service. I became a prison sponsor. I became a hospital sponsor. And through that, I was involved with the Scottish Recovery Consortium. I started off as a normal, you know, just a member. And then I became a board member. And then I ended up vice chair of the Scottish Recovery Consortium, which is government funded. But I always managed to get jobs that are, you know, non-paying. You know, I can always manage to do that because that's the thing I like about Alcoholics Anonymous. We're no interested in money. No interest in your money. Keep your money. You don't want it. Have you got a problem with your drink? Can you stop drinking by yourself? Do you need help? That's what we're here for. That's the only reason that I understand alcoholics is here. One alcoholic talks to another alcoholic. Because there were so many people coming and not staying, so many people griping about the word God, and although I tried to, you know, tell them what worked on me, I realised then that perhaps they need a place where they don't have to follow rigid guidelines, where they can maybe come to a meeting and maybe express the problems that they're going through in their life without being judged. People are desperate. They're desperate to share. They're desperate to make a connection. Desperate to make a connection when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And yet, we hear all the happy clappy stories and the water walkers and everybody's, yeah, and nobody's had a bad day and everybody's fine and everybody's lovely. And yet they're sitting there with this stuff and they can't get it out. And if they do, if they get to such a state where they're so disturbed that they blurt it out at a meeting how they really feel, then there's a queue of people at the door wanting to tell them, you know, well, you're doing this wrong and you need to get down on your knees here and you need to hand it over, and you know. And I think it's about taking responsibility. It's a thing I could never do. I could give the impression or the appearance of being a responsible guy, but I could never take responsibility. I think coming to Alcoholics Anonymous has opened the path for me to take responsibility for myself, but I had to learn how to do it. I had to learn how to do it. Most alcoholics hate responsibility, and they come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they say, well, you don't really have to be responsible anyway. You can hand it over to this power, and this power will take everything, and I'll do everything for you. All you have to do is turn your will and your life over to this power. And it doesn't even say that. It says, turn your will and your life over to the care of God. So I see people doing that, and I say to them, look, yeah, if it works for you, do that. You know, but if there comes a time where it doesn't work for you, you know, there's a place where you can come, where you can unload, where you won't be judged, where you can talk about whatever you like, because that's another thing, you know. They sent out from the General Service Office this thing a number of years ago, you know, when talking about, please keep your talk to how it, that part that involves alcohol, you know. And as I say, I wish the fuck alcohol was my problem. My problems were treated with alcohol. It was a coping mechanism, as were my character defects. When the drinking came to the bit, I sought help. When it came to the bit where I couldn't stand it anymore, I sought help. My character defects have always annoyed other people far more than they annoyed me. When they started annoying me, I did something about it. I took them in hand. I took responsibility. I took the action. And that's why I'm here today. So not a good example of Alcoholics Anonymous, but there you go. It is what it is, which is another expression I don't particularly like. I'm not shy. I'm not shy to speak my truth. I don't hide my light under a bushel. So when I go to meetings and everybody's happy, clappy, the top tables rising off the seat with choirs of angels lifting them, you know, and they're held shoulder high to the accolade of the crowd, you know, I like to put a spoke in the works, you know, and tell them, well, look, this is the way it is for me. I heard it in AA a long time ago. I like to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. That's my mission in life as I get older, you know. Troublemaker, extraordinaire. However, I don't want to cause any trouble with you guys. Glad to be here and sober. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dante. I couldn't really agree more with what Dante says there on the idea that you should keep things to your drinking problem. I mean, I don't feel like I've had a drinking problem. Well, I haven't had a drinking problem for nearly 6 years. And there is that thing about it being a thinking problem. It's not just thinking, no, it's thinking, mental health, the whole deal. And that remains a problem just now. And that's what I need to talk about. And that's what I need to work on to stay sober. I've got the hang of this don't drink thing, but I need to keep I need to talk about that other stuff. For what it's worth, it's good to be able to talk about, or it's good to, for other people to hear about your experience with alcohol, newcomers to hear that. But once we're in a while, I guess that seems to have less importance, and it's how we manage our emotions that's the key thing, I think. Certainly it is for me. Karen is going to be our next speaker. So Karen is someone who joined our group when we went onto Zoom after the pandemic hit, among with a few other faces here that are pleasing to see. So Karen is from London. We have numerous people from all over England and America and other places come to our meeting. So very pleased to introduce Karen, who will also give us another little share. So Karen.
Thanks, David. Hello, everyone. I'm Karen from London. You're right, but actually not really from London. I'm half Scottish and half Irish. So I really liked your share, Dante. It was great. And that was one of the main reasons that I really enjoyed coming to the Tolerance Tuesday meeting. So refreshing to hear these kind of chairs, you know, and to be able to feel comfortable, to be able to say how you really feel without being judged. Or feeling like you're going to then get loads of people jumping in, giving you advice. So I really did appreciate the Tuesday meeting. In fact, it was called Tolerance Tuesday, so it's changed its name. I think we should change it back. But anyway, there you go. It was just a brilliant chair, hard act to follow. Anyway, I'm only 8 years sober, say only. Up next to Dante, I'm still a newbie. And I think I could really identify with the, you know, the feeling of being part of. So that's what I felt when I came to AA, especially to secular AA. I felt it in non-secular AA as well. Like I felt very welcome by people that went to those meetings. But I quickly realised that they weren't for me, and secular AA fitted me better. So there you have it. I was just very fortunate to be living in London and have one literally on the doorstep. That's where I met Cyril, who's here tonight. You know, and I've felt part of that group for the past 7.5 years because I actually got sober before I came to AA. So I think some people do, some people don't. We're all different, we're all individuals. But what I really like about AA is that people all know where you're coming from. So we all know what it's like to be addicted to alcohol, dependent on alcohol, and how difficult that is and how destructive it is. not just for us, but the people around us that love us and care for us. That could be your kids, could be your parents, whoever, your friends. And of course, you know, it's so destructive for us as individuals. You know, it completely, I liked what you said about the kind of emotional stunt, being stunted emotionally, you know, it just dampens you down. So yeah, it's like being in under anesthetic, really. You know, it's hard enough to express yourself when you're sober, right? Never mind when you're pissed. So yeah, it was a great chair. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but I had a shit childhood as well. It was hard. There was some abuse. There was a neglect, emotional neglect, bereavements, all of that. Trauma, basically, I still believe, led me to become addicted to alcohol, like you said, to just dampen down the pain of it all, really, and not deal with it. So now I don't drink. Of course, I still have the trauma. It didn't just go away. I didn't, like, give up the trauma. It's still there. And that, I believe, is going to be years to deal with, not just weeks or months. It may even be another 8 years for me to deal with the trauma. It could be 28 years. I don't know. But anyway, I think by quitting the drink, I've given myself half a chance. And I think it takes a lot of guts, and, you know, not just guts. I think fortune as well. Like, loads of people don't actually give up drink and it kills them. So we're actually the lucky ones, I believe. I was talking to somebody earlier, Marion, thinking about how my life has changed in 8 years. And no, it's certainly not perfect. You know, there are things in it that I think, oh, that could change or that could be better. But it's definitely improved since I've quit drinking. You know, I'm able to work. I'm able to study part-time and work full-time. I have a great relationship now with my daughter, who's just turned 26. You know, I still have problems with my mental health. Like, I have depression and anxiety. Again, I don't think that's probably ever going to go away, a bit like the trauma. I'm able to cope with it better now. I don't drink. So anyway, I don't want to talk for too long. And I did say that to you guys earlier. Well, whenever we spoke about the meeting, that I'm just going to be really brief because I want other people to come in and share back. But yeah, definitely, I would definitely recommend the Happy Heathens meeting on Tuesday in Glasgow, because it's a fantastic meeting. You can talk about trauma. You can talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, and nobody's going to tell you to shut up or make you feel ashamed or any of that, or make you feel like you're not part of. So it is a great group, and I'd highly recommend that people check it out. And with that, I'll hand it back to David. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. Yeah, Dante certainly alluded to it in his share, and I think good that you mentioned the word trauma, because it is something that a lot of traditional meetings as well, the mention of that is sort of frowned upon and or can be a bit. And I sometimes feel in meetings that, whilst I absolutely agree we have to take responsibility and clean up our side of the street, you know, there is, it's useful to understand the reasons why you ended up the way you ended up, so that you can avoid it or so you can best tackle it. And also understand that it's not just that you're a bad person, it's that there were reasons why this stuff happened or why this came about that aren't your fault. They're not necessarily anybody's fault. So yeah, I do like the fact that our meeting and the secular meetings that is discussed more openly. So it was good that you mentioned that. So with that, really, I think we'll just throw the meeting open to anyone who would like to come in and share on anything you like. You can either share on what other people shared, or you can come in and just share on whatever's going on for you just now. So I see a hand up there. Is that, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but is it Toyn S?
That's actually pretty good. I'll take it. It's I'm Tone. I'm a person in recovery. I'm really glad I got to attend here tonight. So I loved your shares, and thanks for hosting this as well. Thanks for all your service, and yeah, I can relate to a lot. Like, yeah, fuck yeah, I wish alcohol was my problem. It's the least of my worries. Mental health. I was always a loner growing up. When I was around 15, I discovered that booze and alcohol I could use those to be social, or to calm my fucking ADHD brain, which I'm having trouble with now. Whenever I get anxious or insecure or scared, my brain turns into this tornado. Quite frankly, that has me a bit depressed the last few weeks. And I'm thinking about trying some ADHD medicines again. Not sure if I will. And I agree that to just the scope of your share being limited to alcohol, that's bullshit. It's anything to me that's anything that's related to my recovery is not an outside issue. And I agree that all the substances and character defaults or whatever you want to call them are just coping mechanisms for me. And some of them are really in my way. Like all the labels you get, alcoholic, addict, ADHD, codependent, inappropriate cunt, I don't know. All of them apply. And my big mouth is my coping mechanism. Whenever people get too close, I just make an inappropriate joke because that's what people will be talking about, not the shit that's going on with me, right? It's a blessing and a curse. The curse is that I don't really get to let people in. I've been practicing in meetings and with people in recovery, my therapist and all that stuff, but it can be a blessing. I get to meet a lot of people and get in contact easier nowadays than. But yeah, lately I've been feeling like the same scared, insecure little boy that I was before I started using, and I've been running into some intimacy and sexuality problems and all that stuff. My therapist pushed the right buttons last week when we got to that core issue, and that made me feel, I don't know, trauma probably applies. I don't know. I wasn't abused, I think, but I never felt like I was able to safely express myself and my emotions. My entire family just drank and had a good time, and I was overstimulated all the fucking time. And yeah, I never knew how to be social or around attractive people, or I don't fucking know. I still don't fucking know, and it's pissing me off. And it hurts to think that in some areas I haven't really developed from the time I started using till now. But yeah, that's also me being hard on myself. I did develop. I get to practice a lot of life skills in recovery, and but the last few weeks have been hard. My tornado brain is pissing me off. Well, it's not pissing me off. It's making me scared. What if I never get out of this mental state of fear, constant fucking fear, not knowing what to do? I'm a little over 6 months sober now, so that's good. A bit of a dark place now, but I'm really happy to be able to share it with other lovely folks in recovery and to see that mental health and trauma get the attention they deserve in a lot of secular meetings especially. And I'm really glad to have found CODA meetings as well. Started a CODA youngsters in-person meeting in my home city as well. And it's great to see young people, 18-year-olds, saying, I don't want to deal with my crap with substances. I want to take better care of myself and be who I am. I guess that's inspiring, even though I feel a bit depressed now. Anyway, I'm rambling. Thanks all for your service and your shares. And I could really relate to a lot of what you said. So thanks.
Thanks very much, Toon. Is it Holland you're from, yeah? The Netherlands. Sorry, excuse me.
The Netherlands.
Yeah, sorry. Yep. Nice to have you, and well done in 6 months. I identified with some of what you said there. I have been, as I say, nearly 6 years now, and I feel like I've regressed in some areas of recovery. I've developed and come forward in a lot of areas, and I suppose that's just part of the thing. It's a bastard that's part of the thing, because I thought it was just going to be a constant upward trajectory forevermore, but apparently not. Anyway, so Cyril, I see you've got a hand up, and then I'll come to Miles P.
Yes, thank you, David. My name's Cyril, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks so much, David and Marion and Joe, for putting on the meeting. And Dante and Karen, thank you so much for fabulous sharing. I'm a regular, yes, at the Glasgow Tuesday night meeting that's been referred to, and I recommend it unreservedly. Yeah, it used to be called Tolerant Tuesday, as Karen mentioned. And nearly every week when I do go along and share, I end up by saying, thank you so much for being as tolerant as you are to listen to some of my rants and some of the difficult times that, you know, I in particular feel that I've gone through with this sort of COVID lockdown for the last 2 years, which has been absolutely horrible. Dante, you're absolutely right, my friend. For me, today it's about a living problem, not a drinking problem. We're around about sort of the same time. All I know is that my nature means that I will overreact to anything that comes into my life, good or bad. I will overreact to stuff. And it's AA meetings that sort of keep me grounded and keep me right-sized, as they say, and in perspective. I mentioned the last 2 years of COVID. They've been fucking horrible. I've been sober for a very, very long time. And these have been the two worst years of my life. They really have. Partly because life problems came in. A very elderly mum, a daughter who has quite severe mental health issues. Stuff that everyone on the planet is going through. Do you know what I mean? Apart from laid on with this bloody lockdown, which has closed me down to all the safety valves that I had to keep myself in check and in balance. I mean, things like music and gardening and traveling and all these things that we used to do, I used to do, all got locked down. And I found myself in this bloody field here in North Essex for the last 2 years, living on Zoom. And it's not good for perspective at all. So I've tried to sort of take a deep breath, keep it simple, in many ways go back to basics, actually. And as we are now gently, easily coming out of this sort of lockdown, I've started to sort of re-engage with some of the things that I hadn't done for quite a long time. And it really has made a spectacular difference. If I may, I want to pick up on you talking about your immigrant background, Dante, just as an illustration of where I am these days. I was so touched to hear you speak about your parents in the way that you did. My parents were exactly the same. We all came over from Ireland in 1960 to live in North London. And my dad just couldn't get a bloody flat in London in my lifetime, you know. Many of you may well know they used to have the signs up. The polite version was, no black people, dogs or Irish need apply for rooms. And my dad actually experienced that for a long time and it never sort of left me at all. It was absolutely horrible. And I bring that forward to the current day because one of my furies is the way the world, in my humble opinion, is going backwards. And immigration and racism is one of those big things for me. And I wanted to connect it with your beautiful little saying that you mentioned in your chair, Dante. It's a gorgeous expression, comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. I absolutely love that. And in many ways, it sums up what I try to do in AA myself as a little sort of grain of sand on the beach. It's a beautiful philosophy to live your life by, I think, really. And I really love it. Anyway, I was so impressed by the quote that I looked it up. And actually, it comes from a guy called Cesar Cruz, who came over, surprise, surprise, as an immigrant from Mexico, very much in the tradition that you've mentioned, Dante, and as I mentioned with my own working class family coming over from Ireland. Now, Cesar is now a Harvard professor, by the way, and it just sort of shows what can be done and that we do not need or should demonize immigrants and other, you know, groups who have hard times in our world, you know, in the way that we do. And this again is just part of the fantastic connection that I feel now in secular AA. It's extremely liberating. I've learned so much in secular AA that I never knew before about human nature and all sorts of things, really. And in traditional, I'll end by saying, I've never been in an organization which proscribed what I can think and what I can say. I began by railing against it. And then, like you, Dante, I just sort of picked the bits that worked and left the rest. Do you know what I mean? It was very, very important. But many, many folks, sadly, in AA don't hold the course and they do leave before they get the message and get sober. And these are the people that I think the responsibility statement should be all about. So secular AA is not just a liberating and fantastic organization for me. I think it's saving many, many more lives that otherwise would be lost to this horrible illness. And I've probably gone on for too long, so I better stop talking now. But it was delightful to hear all you folks. It's really brightened up my Sunday evening. Get along to Tuesday night Glasgow, people around the world. You'll love it. We need more tolerance, more happy heathens, and more free-thinking, sensitive, thoughtful, wonderful grown-ups. AA needs more of them. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Cyril. And good to see you here tonight as well. Cyril has been a stalwart of our meeting, so good to have him. I'm going to come to Miles P and then Neil B before I come to Marion. So, Miles.
Hi, my name's Miles. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, David. Thank you, Joe, for putting this all together and everyone up in Glasgow. And Dante and Karen are really, really lovely shares. And I sent you a little note, Dante, just because I had to say something. And it was about, you know, how different we can be and yet how similar we can be. And it was lovely to hear you. You know, when I was in early recovery, I thought the longer I'd been around, the closer I'd get to being a sort of Zen master and my life would be more and more serene. But it hasn't worked out quite like that. Even when, you know, as you do, you know, I've tried to do the right stuff. And just recently, I've just come out of a marriage which involved moving abroad and, you know, love for the first time after 60 years and it collapsed. And, you know, I came back and here I am, you know, in England again with the COVID thing coming on. So it's been a double whammy. And, you know, I find it really refreshing and liberating, I think the word is, to hear people with long-term sobriety and, you know, and Karen with a little less talking about trauma, talking about emotional immaturity, and you know, and that is where, you know, where I look and what I know is you know, part of me as an alcoholic who works really hard. And I spend a lot of time doing all the right stuff in traditional AA meetings. I was blessed for a while. I worked in Stepping Stones at Bill Wilson's house for my sponsor work there when I was in America. And so I really got in with that side of it. And I love it all. But, you know, there's always been this nagging, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. And it's really hard, you know, in traditional meetings, you know, to come up and put your hand up and say no, because I've never really had that sense of confidence to say, no, I will not buy that. But recovery is teaching me to say, you know what, I am allowed to have my feelings and my validations. And, you know, it's part of that self-esteem thing that can get so rusty and so kind of fragile in my life, you know. As you talked about, yeah, I get a nice wife or somebody loves me, then my self-esteem comes. They go away and I start hating myself again. Whatever, they've left me because I'm no good. I'll prove that to myself. So, you know, it's just really reassuring to be in a meeting here. I've got Rick in Edmonton, who was my sponsor over there and has become a wonderful friend. In fact, I'm loath to use the word sponsor now. I've got a chap here in Crediton in England, Rob, who's an American, and he's my so-called sponsor. But really, the word friend applies right now. We've done the steps, things we talk about life, and we talk about you know, human frailties and the strength that we need to gather on a daily basis. And sometimes it's been wonderful to hear talk about mental health, especially the churn. I'm not sure how you describe it, but good on you, man. 6 months. And, you know, I came into AA because I was really, really depressed. I drank a hell of a lot, but for a long time, I didn't think I had an alcohol problem. But, you know, I started getting a bit clearer and listening to what people said, and I began to realize, yes, I am an addict. And those addictions still, you know, they're still there. And I liked, I don't know who said it, but some, I think Cyril said it, you know, that I sort of react either too much to what's going on, you know. And so I'm a bit jumbled at the moment. I'm glad that it was Roger from another meeting that Cyril and I go to who put me onto this meeting. I'm just in the right place, you know. Secular meeting feels much better to me. I haven't really been going to ordinary meetings, but I would love to be able to go to a live one-to-one, you know, few people meeting. I'll end on this. Had a little excitement on the weekend. I went up to see Manchester United at Old Trafford, And as a little boy, they were my favorite football team, and this was a special thing. So from sitting in my house on my own, and I was talking about Gabriel Garcia Marquez did a book called 100 Days in Solitude. Mine was 1,000 Days of Solitude. Yesterday, I was in a crowd of 75,000 people. And you know what? It was okay. And I'm here and I've survived it. But yeah, strange old life. So thank you, everyone. Really good to hear you guys. And that's enough for me for the night. Thank you.
Thanks, Miles. I'm going to come to Neil B. and then Marion.
I'm Neil. I'm a drunk that don't drink. I'm up in Burlington, Ontario here, and I'm listening very close, and I'm hearing what I like. And Dante, you're pushing buttons all over the place. Great. And Karen, yeah. We all know at some stage, once we live a little bit and learn and get healthier in AA, what the problem really is. And when Dante, when you said your booze was your secondary problem, I go, oh, I didn't know that till I was 5 years in AA. I was just, you know, I didn't see that. The light wasn't on there, you know. You know, I drank from age 21 to 40. So that's 19 or 20 years. And during that time, I was as free as a bird. At nobody, I don't recall, unless I was face down on the floor, yelling in my ear, nobody had the nerve to tell me that I was drinking too much. Nobody. And that was good because I didn't want to bloody hear it. But it came for me at the end. The ending was like a rocket filled with booze that slammed into the side of a mountain. I didn't do a lot of things that you people, quote, trip typical, whatever there is, drunks did, and the ways they tried to stop. And then I don't identify with so much of it because of the circumstances that I had in front of me that I could get away with it. You know, my whole family, that's my wife and two kids, became alcoholics. My older son is 29 years sober. Very proud of him. Between the four of us, we smashed up five cars, or we customized them by crash, whatever you like. And then why could I do all that? I was employed in a career that allowed my booze consumption to be overlooked. They looked a blind eye because they did it because of a variety of reasons. Okay? First of all, when I worked undercover, the booze was free. What could be better than that, eh? Free booze whenever. Nobody stopping you. Get out of your way. So when I hit the wall, as we say, and I entered AA, I was angry. I was angry, and I was sick. I was sick, especially physical. I didn't know I had a fat liver and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, we all know that kind of stuff, you know. And I think back to back in the day, whenever it was. When I first came in, I was sober for a year and then drank again, of course, because I was, like many, looking for an out. If I could squeeze through the door again, get out, put my hand around a bottle of rye, I did it. So in 86, I quit. But I remember George Hopkins, John Hopkins University, putting out a 20 question pamphlet, you know, and if you answered three or more, you were probably an alcoholic. Well, they missed one in there that I thought would have been, logical. And this is one that I had. And it would have read, if you, on a hot, hot summer day, wake up on your back on the beach with your mouth open and you've got the roof of your mouth sunburnt, you might be an alcoholic. Hey, I knew that one. Anyway, yeah, when I hear people said originally, and I'm so-and-so and my problem is me, I go, get your face out of me. But it's come around for me at the time to see that, yeah, man, this is really it. The clouds have lifted and I'm looking in the mirror. Great meeting. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Neil. That was great.
I'm going to come to Marion and then the grateful Jeb.
Hiya, my name's Marion and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks everybody. I've really enjoyed listening to everybody and Dante and Karen. Thanks. You know, I get great identification with Beatty's. My dad got sober when I was 10 months old, so it's really funny because see when Dante talks about Dundas Street and the way that he talks about Dundas Street, right? Imagine, like, you know, I was running about Dundas Street in the 70s as a child. And so I've always been a part of the AA community. And addiction doesn't run in my family, it gallops, you know. And I grew up in a house where my dad ran off to an AA meeting and my mum took a Valium. And there wasn't a whole load of positive coping mechanisms going on. But I had it a lot better than cousins and other folk whose dads or, you know, parents were still performing. So, you know, I was very much brought up in a stable home and whatnot. But yeah, it's the thing about AA is that AA is full of sick people, including myself and that, you know. I've been alcohol free for 17 years. I broke my spine. I use opiate medication and I use cannabis, which is still illegal in Scotland. I'm not a black belt in recovery, right? I don't spout that everything that I do is the best thing since sliced cheese. But I came to AA to no use alcohol because alcohol was the thing that made my life completely and utterly chaotic. Alcohol just exacerbated what was wrong with me. So I come to AA to no drink alcohol and to have a manageable life. The way I like to look at it is if you've got substance use that is unmanageable, then you need to deal with that. And the 12-step program is an excellent way of doing it. But for me, I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I really don't want to drink. I still want to eat sweeties. I still hang about with the bad boys, you know. It's like, I'm not perfect, but see, since I removed alcohol from my life, I've got my self-dignity. My life was just pathetic and chaotic and really sad. And by removing alcohol, I've learnt to stand on my own two feet. I still have mental health issues, but I'm no in the new mental institutions. I'm no, you know, everybody's getting peace, man. Everybody, the doctors, the nurses, the psych wards, you know, everybody. But most of it is that I have peace. The young man with the tornado brain, that is just the best. Like, honest, I still have a tornado brain. But I think I'm going to get a T-shirt made with that on it, because that's such an excellent way of describing it. I've got lots of labels stuck on me, dyslexia, and I reckon just about every spectrum that's out there, I'm probably on it somewhere, you know. The important thing for me is coming to AA. My relationship with AA is as dysfunctional as my relationship with everything else in this world. But see, the last 2 years, see the whole COVID thing and all the horrors that's went on, I've actually found myself turning to my programme to help me to deal with a world that I, you know, that I struggle to deal with. And I'm finding it really, really helpful, because it is just about trying to get Marion all right, and not try to fix the whole world. But it's really lovely to see you all. And I'm glad to be here and I'm glad to be sober. And thanks to my group for giving me the space to be me. Cheers.
Thanks, Marion. Just when you mentioned tornado brain again there, I'm thinking, would the Scottish translation be that? Be having a head like a pound of mince, which is a head like a pound of mince, for those who didn't quite catch that. Anyway, the grateful Jeb I'm going to come to, and then Alan.
My name is Jeb, and I'm a grateful recovered addict, alcoholic. And what lovely shares, both of you, Karen and Damien. And I say lovely because, you know, shares like those open up memories that I don't normally look at, you know, my dark past. And I love what Bill wrote in the Big Book, that our dark past is our principal asset. And in one place it says in helping others, and in other places it's our only asset. And so I need to never shut my door on things like that. And I wish that I could be more specific about the crap that I did and felt in my drinking years or my years of running away from my true self. But what I'm so grateful for is that I found a path to move away from that, to become the kind of person I can actually like when I listen to myself, when I look at myself in the mirror. For me, the 12-step life is a life of coming home to my authentic self and just growing up. Many other things, of course. I only drank alcoholically for about 19 years, like my friend Neil did. For me, alcohol was the solution. Some things happened in my childhood and youth that if I had let them sit in the front of my brain, you know, consciousness all the time, I probably would have killed myself. Because actually I did have one suicide attempt when I was 18, and that was in a period when I was at the University of Michigan and had no access to my medicine, which is alcohol, because of the drinking age there. But that's the beginning of a long story for me that brings me up to this point where I realized the other day that probably the first 41 years of my life, I never felt really safe and secure any place, except when I was really young. It was on my grandmother's lap, who was unconditionally accepting and loving of me. And then the first couple years of sobriety, alcohol-free, I continued in that sort of panic state until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where my my recovery work started. You know, I look at those 2 years as the years of drinking also was untreated alcoholism. The only thing that had changed was I wasn't drinking, but I was still an insecure asshole, and it took the program and fellowship of AA to bring me to this point. So I'm just going to end this by saying I've only lived this new life for 15,744 days. Regardless of how long I'm clean and sober, I still only do it one day at a time. And so the most important coin that I ever received in AA is that 24-hour coin that says, you know, a reminder that just for today, I'm not going to drink. And what a wonderful meeting. And I actually understood Damien. I often am afraid to go to a Scottish meeting because you do pronounce words and have a different vocabulary, different from ours. But Dante, is it Dante? Oh, sorry. Print is awfully small on the screen, but thank you so much for your share. And thanks, Joe, and everyone else for setting this up. Love you all. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Jeb. Really good to hear from you and good to have you here. Alan.
My name's Alan. I'm an alcoholic. I thank Maureen for doing the readings, David, for chairing the meeting, and Dante and Karen for their shares, you know. I've known Dante a long time, heard them all. Heard him numerous times sharing his experience, and if you've read The God Delusion by Dawkins, I came up with all the same ideas way back in my teens because I was a regular in a local church. It was one of my ways of staying away from all the crap in my family, but I couldn't put these things into words, you know. So Dawkins describes what I was thinking far clearer and better than I could, and Dante's done the same thing, because when I get sober at the age of 31, I heard all this mad language, you know. So I suffer from an allergy, and I'm still not convinced it's an allergy. At the same time, when I look back at my drinking, when I took one drink, that was me, I was off and running, you know. And I don't really care these days what it was that causes that. If I could accept the fact that I couldn't control my drinking, that was good enough for me, you know. But Dante was one of these folk. He put a lot of stuff into, he expressed a lot of things in a clear way that I couldn't, especially early on in my sobriety. Because I heard it was an honest programme, I told everyone I was atheist, and they kind of kept away, you know. I had three attempts at getting a sponsor, and every one of them turned me down. Because I was asking things like, how do you do this programme without a belief in God, you know? And some of them said to me, well, you can't. I now know that's garbage, you know. I recommend the programme, the 12-step programme, to anybody, just not in the way it's phrased on the scrolls, you know. It was years and years before I found out each step was a principle, and no matter what way you express the steps, you know, so if you're working the principle, you know, you're working the programme. I spent an awful lot of time in traditionally, nobody spoke about atheism, so I didn't know who to go to speak to, you know. I knew statistically that I couldn't be the only possible atheist, the only possible person with a problem. But nobody spoke about it, so who did I go to speak to? In traditional meetings, I speak about my higher power as being the power of sharing and the power of example. Power of sharing. I stuck out in AA for months, going to as many meetings as I could, and eventually heard enough people share things that happened, things I felt, some of the thought processes that I had during my drinking. And I started to get this trick of identification and finally accept I was alcoholic. With the power of example as well, the people in the meetings, they seemed all right. You know, they seemed to be reasonably happy and contented with life. You know, it's that kind of gave me a wee bit of hope. And that's for me, that's how I believe Alcoholics Anonymous works. If you speak about a problem I find that I've got, I would come to you. I've never had a sponsor as such, you know, not in a traditional sense. Instead, what I've done is, when I've got identification with a problem that I've got, I'll maybe come to you, because you've been through it, you know. What was your solution? And I'll give you some headroom, and I'll maybe give it a wee go. And that's worked for me for a couple of decades now. And because I identified with, I think it was Tune. Don't know if he's got his name right. 6 months sober. I was 9 months sober, and I stopped drinking and done nothing. I'd done absolutely nothing. And I'm sitting there with the fears and anxieties. I still had some of the paranoia from my drinking and the blackouts. And I was thinking to myself, is this as good as it gets? And I came to the conclusion it was better than what I had. Thankfully, that wasn't the end of it, you know. I found recovery very slow. I think that's not a bad thing, you know. I dealt with problems as they came up. I found the right people for me to share with, because not everybody was the right person. I'm now in a similar place to Dante, so I'm quite happy to talk about my recovery in my terms. I started doing that just before for a couple of years, just before the secular meeting started. And it puts noses out of joint in traditional meetings. Some noses, I must admit, I'm quite happy to put out of joint, you know, I quite enjoy it, you know. But I don't do it deliberately, I don't do it to be controversial, you know. I share my experience and how recovery works for me. And I think everybody should be given that opportunity, because we're not all the same people. We don't all have the same background. We don't all have the same lives, you know. I've certainly had my problems during sobriety. But he's given me the ability to kind of deal with them, to put them in a proper perspective, you know. For me, recovery is it's acknowledging the reality of situations and going to get the right help, whether it's within Alcoholics Anonymous or without it. Most of the time, I've got what I think is the prize in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's peace and contentment. Been able to live in my own head, been at peace with myself. I'm not always at peace with the world, but most of the time I'm at peace with myself. And for me, that's priceless, because I never knew that before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can remember the very first time I had any peace whatsoever. And I was sitting in my car at the traffic lights, singing along to ABBA on the radio. And I knew something was different, and I didn't know what it was. And after 5 minutes of worrying about it, I started to panic. I had this very strange feeling. I went home and I paced about. And I couldn't get to wait to a meeting to talk to somebody about it. And that's what it was. It was peace and contentment, just for 5 minutes. And it was that alien to me. I did not know what it was. 9 months sober, it wasn't the end of the world. You know, it was part of the beginning. You know, so change takes time, and it's worth it. Hang in there, guys, if you're having a bad time. You know, so these things will pass. Get the right people about you. That's been my experience anyway. Glad to be here, glad to be sober.
Thanks, Alan. Joe has just asked me a question. Marion, are you able to, on WhatsApp, send me that quote from Bill W?
Bill Wilson, Grapevine article, Anarchy Melts, 1946. They'll get it on Google. I'm pretty sure that's where I got it.
Anarchy Melts, 1946, right. I'll see if I can find it while the next person is talking.
I will read it again if folk want to hear it, but there's somebody waiting to come in.
Yeah, I'm going to let Tim come in and I'll try and find it in the meantime. So, Tim, L.
I'm Tim, an alcoholic, and as several other people said, I really love this meeting. You know, alcohol was just a really bad treatment program that I had, and I've been going down that path of not using alcohol for 55 months, but I think as Bobby said, I still have trouble with that short fuse I have, and it's a matter of it's a journey. I mean, it's a slow, gradual progression to find the path to a little bit of tranquility of mind or emotional sobriety, as Bill Wilson called it. But it's an ongoing journey. It's one of those days that some days I seem real close to it, and other days I seem a million miles away. But as long as I keep seeking for it, and come to the meetings and hear the sharing of other people, it brings me back to that center, and I really appreciate the meeting today. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tim. I'm just looking to see if there's any hands up. Might very briefly commend myself just while there are no hands up, and please do stick your hand up if you would like to speak. Just to say that I've really enjoyed a lot of the shares tonight and identified with so many of them. The tornado brain thing or the madness, I still feel that is with me very strongly. And it wasn't for about a year or so. I was on the pink cloud and I was happy and everything was great and whatever. And then some stuff started to happen that was not so great. And then that threw me into being more stressed and anxiety and depression creeping back in again. And I'm still not very good at sitting at peace, which is quite a Scottish, when I say that, it's a sort of Scottish phrase, so sit at peace. But it means what it says. I struggle to sit and be peaceful for any length of time. On my own, I'm always needing to do stuff. I'm always needing, and I take on too much still all the time. Most disappointing thing, a couple of people sort of touched on different things that they are still doing, is that I discovered, and we were talking about this at our meeting last week, somebody said they were grateful, they really enjoyed the process of peeling back the layers of their mind and discovering new things about themselves. So even if it was problems, they enjoyed the process. I've not enjoyed that process. I've kind of felt as though it's like going along a beach and you lift up stones and there's some horrible creature that you never knew was there before. And, you know, oh my God, another thing that I have to deal with. So for me, it's been discovering that I was an active sex and love addict. which was probably always the case, but the alcohol masked it for a long time. I was spending so much time getting drunk, I didn't have time for the other stuff. I think the love addiction was driving a lot of the alcohol. Dante mentioned that, you know, a lot of alcoholics, not saying all of us, I can't speak for everyone here, but I mean, a lot of us are compulsively seeking love or attention seeking. You could be less kind and put it that way, but it's love seeking, I think. And so I discovered I had these new problems. Well, they weren't new problems, but they were new to me after I got sober and was sober for a while. And I've still not got a handle on those. I wish it was as easy as just stopping using. But unfortunately, the brain is somewhat wired for love and sex, the same way as it is for eating food. So I sympathize greatly with anyone who has got an addiction to food or a food problem, because these are conditions you have to manage rather than just be abstinent in most cases, certainly in the case of food. So that's difficult for someone like us to try and manage an addiction or manage but although we are all doing it to some extent because we're all having to manage our emotions, and that's difficult for us as well, most of us. So yeah, it's been really good to hear everyone talk about that stuff. And I just wanted to throw that in, because if anyone's not particularly all that long about, these are things you might discover in the course of the years, months and years to come, that, you know, there will be new problems, there will be new discoveries. Some of them won't be pleasant. Some of them are just going to add a whole new bunch of problems that you're going to have to work through. But were I not sober, I wouldn't have discovered these things, and they would have continued untreated completely for years. And Christ knows what would have been the further complications of that. And I wouldn't have been able to get somewhere nearer sanity. I know, Joe, you said you're pretty much perfect at the start of the meeting, jokingly. So I've a ways to go yet before I'm perfect. But I'm a perfectionist, like most of us in this room probably are as well, so I'll keep striving. Sorry, I see, Toon, you've got your hand back up again.
Yeah, I'm double dipping.
Yeah, no worries.
Just wanted to pitch in on the tornado brain thing. It's like all my life, it's a codependence thing as well, right? So all my life, it's the article I shared in the chat as well. I grew up to be a people pleaser because others gave me a sense of direction, right? But turns out I've been living all my life, I don't know who the hell I am. What do I want? What do I need? What do I feel? What's my path in life? Who am I? All those questions I've tucked away for so long, and I guess that's where the feeling of being scared little kid again comes back, and it's pretty terrifying, right? So I'll be doing chores all evening and say, like, fuck, it's 10 p.m. Where did all the time go? I want time to relax, and then when I do get time to relax, I don't know what I want to do. Am I going to play video games? Am I going to do Netflix? Am I going to call a friend? I don't know. I don't know what I end up overthinking 3 hours and go to sleep. Yeah, very productive. But yeah, that's the tornado brain thing. And I think it all has to do with, I don't know what it all has to do with, just finding your own path can be very tricky. And if you don't know how to regulate your emotions or your thoughts, and your brain is bouncing around all day, then it can be very difficult to make decisions. And I think that's where I'm at. I need to try stuff to know if it's for me, but I'm scared of trying stuff because whenever I tried stuff or was vulnerable in my youth, I ended up being ridiculed or hurt or whatever. So yeah, to be continued. But it does feel great to be around all you other crazy people. So. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely sympathize with that because that's when I try and relax. The pressure to relax makes me stressed that I'm not doing it properly. I'm not relaxing properly. Ah. Anyway, Chuck F., I think, from Canberra wanted to come in.
Just a couple of thoughts. I really enjoyed listening tonight, this morning for me. And I got up at 4:30 in the morning to be here. And it's been well worth it. A couple of things. One is, I think it's so wonderful that we are part of this new movement in AA that, thanks to COVID and Zoom, that we are this international force within AA that's so progressive. And I think it's going to be ushering in a new and fantastic movement inside of AA that people who used to be chased out by God used to say, the saying used to be that they'd be chased back in by John Barleycorn, by all the religious people. And as a matter of fact, that's a lie, because most, if not a huge percentage of people who are atheist and agnostic and humanist and free thinkers and Buddhist and other non-theological people died and forced out of AA by the intolerance. And I love that concept of love and tolerance as our code. And a lot of people don't have it in that traditional AA. One of the things that I'd like to say is what I've noticed in a lot of Zoom groups that are atheist and agnostic, that we know that we've matured in our security and our sense of confidence about ourselves. A guy in AA said, "Chuck, you always say that you're an atheist." And indeed, that attracted a lot of people to me who were also atheists. He said, "You know, you don't say what you're in favor of. You say what you're against, but you don't say what you're in favor of." And that was a really good criticism of me, and a very constructive criticism. Unfortunately, Ash, the guy who said that to me, died of our disease. It's very sad. But I've never forgotten the fact that I know when I have progressed in my life, and I think in the life of many of the AA groups that I go to that are free thinker, that when we stop saying what we're against and start saying what we're for, and this meeting has had an awful lot about what we're for. You know, we are for tolerance. We are for talking about the positivity that you don't need 100% of all of their elements to be in AA. That the quote that from Bill W, that, you know, even the meanest amongst us, and even if we hate the rest of them, if we say we're an AA group, we're an AA group. And I also think that we need to, I need to promote people thinking that, you know, the fact that major AA, much to their chagrin, but begrudgingly accepts us. And I think that that's, we don't have to go outside of AA to be atheist AA, or to be non-theist AA, or to be free thinker AA, or humanist AA. And I'm a lifetime human because I see a lot of positivity in the ability to change, you know, to get affirmations instead of doing oaths in courts, or in Australia to promote commercial sexuality rather than the corruption that comes with seeing prostitution as a as an evil, the whole thing about civil ceremonies for marriages and divorces. Now, 70% of Australia marriages and baby namings are not religious. They're completely civil, thanks to a humanist, non-theist, atheist, who brought this about in 1961. I think we can make, we're very progressive, and we can make a lot of changes in life. But then we're only going to be, people are only going to be attracted to us, not because they want to throw bricks through stained glass windows, but from what I can see, it is attraction rather than promotion. that because we're positive about our atheism, and this meeting, to me, has had so much positivism about our non-theism. And I just like to end by saying, for me, the other day I asked an agnostic guy, I said, what, you know, there's a problem in atheist AA about the word spirituality. What's your take on it as a sort of bridge between atheism as an agnostic and believers? And he says it's connectiveness for him. And I've heard that word today, tonight, several times in this meeting, connectiveness, being connected, being joined with, being part of. For me, that's just a wonderful type of thing. For me, spirituality is devoid of the supernatural. It's things like the courage that it takes to be 6 months sober. I well remember that. Or to be able to stand up and say, I am this way, and if you don't like it, fuck off. And I still am part of, you can't kick me out. So anyway, that's my little take. Thanks for letting me be here at 6:30 in the morning.
Thanks very much, Chuck. And thanks very much for getting up to come along to that commitment. Joe, is that us at time now, I think?
Pretty much. We'll close the formalities and people can sit around and chat if they like. For the record, I was asked, how are you doing? And I said, nearly perfect. The rest of the story is I was born that way and there's been no improvement. So you gotta finish the rest of the story. We'll see how it ends. Thanks to everybody who helped put this meeting on. It was a pleasure to be here. Next month, we are from the state of Washington, so the weather won't be any better, but the AA won't be any worse either. Thanks, everyone, for being a part of it. I'm going to end the recording. Well, actually, if you want to unmute and properly thank everybody, do that.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for attending.
Yep. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you all.